This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 283. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Selina and Barry find themselves in Zero Year, Steve Trevor gets the master key, Batman finally takes out the clown Prince of Crime, Never Say Cinderella Again, The Return of Goofus and Gallant, and another classic artist leaves the studio. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, December 8th, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Mark?
Yes.
I feel like we haven't done this for a long time.
I know. We missed the show last week due to the holiday, so we do have 2 weeks to cover, starting with Catwoman number 25 by Lehman and Lopestri. The Zero Year continues throughout the various DC titles.
It's okay.
Very popular thing going on in Batman, so now we're seeing it propagated throughout.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Before they did this reboot, they were doing, was it Year Zero?
Zero Year.
Was it still Zero Year when they were redoing?
Oh, no, it was Year Zero previously, yes.
Okay, so I'm not imagining that this concept has been visited before, but with juxtaposed words.
You're not imagining that.
Okay.
And of course, it's also a good way to avoid talking about Forever Evil. We still have the situation where there are two sets of titles going on and what appears to be two completely separate continuities, although DC doesn't say that. So we get to see Selina pre-Catwoman in a story that's set during the Gotham Flood, which is what's going on in the Batman title. At this point, she's just this common thief who finds this mountain climbing gear in a backpack, like a grappling gun and rock picks and a rope. She uses those to break into this rich guy's party, but that doesn't go very well. So she goes incognito and then crashes the party. There's appearances by Cobblepot, of course, who will be Penguin, and Basil Carlo, who eventually will be Clayface. She finds these secret sex rooms at the party, which is where she gets her whip that she uses to defend herself against the bad guys. And she ends up stealing these prototype super batteries.
And a cat sort of saves her.
Right. And so her path is essentially set at that point. The Flash, number 25 by Manipole and Buccolato. So enjoy this creative team because this is their last issue and they're moving on to other work at DC. This is yet another Year Zero story. Barry's not yet the Flash. He's a Central City cop who's been assigned to help in the Gotham Flood. He runs into Iris West, who at this point is an intern for the Gotham Gazette. Major piece of convenience there that she just happens to now be working in Gotham.
Yes, what a coincidence.
She and Barry become friends. They're trying to track down this new street drug, Icarus, that gives people, I don't know if you'd call it super speed, but kind of enhanced reflexes. But it also literally burns them up. They burst into flame. Barry is teamed with Harvey Bullock, who, of course, will become a player in the Batman
story. Harvey Bullock.
Right.
No,
yeah. And also this other cop who, of course, ends up being crooked. Barry is dosed with the Icarus, and Iris saves him with a fire extinguisher.
Now, do you think they're going to change the origin story here? Or?
I doubt it.
At least implied maybe that this drug combined with the thing that happens, whatever, to turn him into the speedster. Because why would they have a super speed drug and have him exposed to it if it didn't somehow relate?
I suppose, but it just doesn't seem like DC is that organized to have thought that through. And in the end, Barry just returns to Central City. Forever Evil, Argus, number 2 by Gates and Edwards. Forever Evil drags on. This is going to go on until spring, unfortunately.
Well, that's because people like you buy them.
I suppose. The one thing I did want to point out here is that Trevor gets the Argus key from the president, who is clearly Obama, when they show the president in comic books. And really, until the 1980s, it was just like generic president for the most part.
Well, it kind of has to be. You know, they can't really follow historical continuity for that because they've had Lex Luthor be president.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's kind of silly to try to put a real person in the comic book as president.
But I think starting with Reagan, they started to go, okay, whoever's president at the time will actually make him the president in the DCU.
At least while it's useful.
Right.
Unless we want to make Lex Luthor president.
Exactly.
Which makes no sense at all. I'm going to keep complaining about that.
Right. This key unlocks all the secret Argus rooms worldwide. Some of these we've seen, some of these we haven't. There's the Black Room, which is this magic vault, and that was actually one of the first things we saw in the New 52. Argus basically collects all the magical artifacts in order to contain and control them. There's the Red Room, which is where scientific research is done, and that was introduced in the Justice League title. The Green Room, and this is a new one as far as I know, kind of the ultimate panic room. It's based on a Tesseract, and it's outside space and time and all this, and so they put the president in there. And there's the Circus, which is a maximum security detention facility, which I believe is the same thing that we saw over in the Vibe title. The Wonder Room, which is Trevor's private shrine to Diana, which I don't quite get. Like, so the government somehow funded this, that you could have your own shrine to your girlfriend?
Well, you sell it like, oh, this is where I keep all the stuff that we can take out Diana with if we need to.
So presumably there's a bat room and a super room and a... But it's kind of like his own fortress of solitude, as it were. I just thought it was weird that they had this separate room just for her.
It's altogether sort of reminds me of Warehouse 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Earth 2, number 18 by Taylor and Scott. I have to say I was worried when Robinson left the title, but I think it's doing okay. Taylor's style is less character-based and more action-based. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I like the character-based, but that's okay.
Well, there's some characterization in here. The World Army tries to pick up the pieces after Superman's attack, and Superman at this point is under Darkseid's control, and it's unclear whether he's really Superman or not. I still don't believe it's actually Superman. And the new Batman of Earth 2 is breaking into this containment vault.
If he's really Batman.
Right, where many villains are stored, and it turns out this particular version of Batman is super powered. So is he a clone of Bruce? Is he a robot? Is he someone else? We really don't know yet.
We know he's not Bruce, though, because somebody says Bruce, and he says Bruce.
Right, but is that more like an almost amnesiac response?
Okay.
That's how I took that. He frees Aquawoman, character that I guess we saw in the Golden Age. I don't remember that.
Well, she says, don't call her Aquawoman.
Right, right.
I remember that from somewhere.
And James Olsen, and apparently he can directly connect to the worldwide net through his mind.
And well, so, not directly through his mind. He has to have some, because remember he had to get a phone?
Oh, that's right.
So he can use his mind to connect if he has a connection point.
Yeah. So it's kind of like he has Bluetooth in his head. That's what I would describe it. During all this, Flash is luring Superman away to just reduce the number of casualties, and he gets a broken ankle for doing so.
He gets caught.
And Batman also releases the Joker just long enough to shoot him.
Indeed.
Which I'm like, that's what people have wanted to see for all these years. It's like, just take out the Joker. He's not going to be rehabilitated.
You can't reform him.
So somebody finally went ahead and did it.
I have to say, which is actually crueler and more unusual punishment, to put somebody into this suspended animation for how many years and just forget about them, or to just kill them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Ferris number 21 from Vertigo by Andrako and McManus. So we're into a new storyline, and Cinderella is back. And as a reminder, she's the master spy of the Fables universe. We do get a slight retcon on her origin story, something we really haven't seen a lot of in the Fables continuity, where they actually go back and retell the actual fable. I mean, there's a lot, obviously huge numbers of references. That's what it's all about. But to actually to go back and say, well, here's the sequence. So we're back to present day. Snow White and her cubs are attacked. And Beast is going to Cinderella's shoe shop to find her, but an assassin arrives and blows up the store. While this is all going on, Cinderella has been captured by trolls, and she takes them out in this huge action sequence and saves these girls from human trafficking, basically breaks them out.
So that kind of reminded me of that scene from, I think, the Avengers, where I think it's Black Widow is all tied up.
Yeah, this was very reminiscent.
Russians are questioning her. She wasn't really captured. She was just waiting for the moment to make her escape. And then when she finds out that she's needed, then she escapes and saves the girls.
Yeah, this is very much based on that Black Widow scene. And she realizes that the attack on Snow and the bombing are related and sees it as the handiwork of an old foe. Dum, dum, dum.
But we don't know who yet, do we?
No, we'll find out next issue.
I hope Ferris continues even when Fables is gone. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't, because basically other creative teams are working on it. The only reason they're shutting down Fables is because Willingham wants to move on.
And then he would have a platform to occasionally come back if he wanted to.
Exactly. Well, it's time for Goofus and Gallant. This week, how to do an alternate page layout. For the Goofus side, it's Batman Superman number 6 by Pack and Booth. The storyline is basically a snoozer. It's about a video game, but it's real life and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Every page is on its side. So
it's landscape. The whole book is in landscape.
Exactly. It's difficult to hold the book and read it comfortably, I think. It really didn't add anything whatsoever to the story, basically just a gimmick.
Yeah, and the ads were still right side up.
Oh, and there's also another thing, just wanted to note, and this is going on along among many DC titles right now, where they're putting this, I don't know, 10-page, 8-page ad for Mad Magazine in the end.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you did that once. You really don't have to keep doing that. This seems to be a way just basically to do actual less editorial pages.
I think it is, but...
It's saving you guys lots of money, but it's like, excuse me, I'm paying for a full comic book, please.
You know, Mark, as I'm paging through here, there were no ads in the actual story part.
Hmm.
Now, I didn't even notice that as I was reading it because I was just too annoyed with having to hold the comic book sideways.
So for the Gallant side, it's Trillium number 5 from Vertigo by Lemire. The storyline and the characterization continue to impress me. This will be a great trade, so if you haven't been buying the floppies of this, you definitely want to go and get the trade when it comes out.
I'm just trying to imagine, though, how they will set up the trade.
It'll be very hard to do.
Because, and we'll talk about the layout of this one in a minute, but the first one, it was like you flipped it over and read it from the front and the back.
Right, it's a flip book.
I think that would be hard to do in a trade because you wouldn't really be at the back.
Unless they actually kind of bookend the entire trade.
Yeah.
So this time, he cut the page in half horizontally. So you read the top half of each page and just continue forward like you would with a regular book, except for just the top half. Then you flip over the book, and then you read what is now the top half of the page again. The first half is about the woman from the future. The second half is about the man from the past who have somehow now swapped lives. And this was the result of the aliens and maybe the flower drug.
Yes.
And so our female protagonist finds herself after World War I, but it's a weird World War I where there was a battle with aliens and there's airships and females have very high ranks in the military, which would not have been the case in World War One. And so it's this weird amalgam of what's going on between both the characters. And then the male protagonist finds himself in the future, but there's all these references to his earlier life. And so throughout all this, you can see both the concepts and the artwork on each half on a particular page. Many times they match up.
And it will be like almost like a mirror panel.
Exactly.
Except they show the different timelines. And it's so cool.
This is just a masterpiece of page layout. I'm very impressed. The storyline is great. And it's very inventive what he's doing with this. And it's organic in that it fits with what he's trying to do, what the story is, rather than just a gimmick.
Yes.
Finally, a quick news story. Al Plastino, rest in peace. He was a Golden and Silver Age artist and the first to draw Supergirl and the founders of the Legion of Superheroes. He also co-created the Parasite. A couple other things. He drew a story about Superman and JFK that ironically was going to be published like in December of 63. And
ooh.
So they had to pull it. And, it, you know, obviously they had no idea.
Yeah.
And so they had to pull it and publish it later. Plastino could easily match other artists' styles to the point where at one point he redrew Jack Kirby's Superman pages in order to better match the house style for DC.
Hmm.
So he cleaned those up. And at one point, he was assigned to write up a series of Peanuts cartoons that were never published. You can find them on the net, but they were never actually published. When Charles Schulz had surgery and they weren't sure how long it was going to be before he got back to the drawing board.
Oh, that might be interesting.
So this is a guy who basically worked on both Kirby and Schulz.
Hmm.
and two different artist styles you will never find.
Yes, indeed.
So, and he passed away since we did our last recording. All right, before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
It's Guess Who's on the Cover of Entertainment Weekly. And I'm going to tell you right up front, Mark, that it's one of these listy type of issues.
Listy issues, okay.
Go.
Is it a list having to do with time? So, it's not year in review. It's too early for that, I think. Or maybe it is. Is it the year in review?
Well, it's not really the year in review, but it's sort of like the year
in
review.
Is it a top 10 or top
yes.
number?
It's a
something?
Top 10.
So it's top 10. Didn't they just do a top 10 of top 10s or something?
I don't know, but they tend to go back to the same thing over and over again.
All right.
So this is the top 10 2013.
Top 10. So I need to figure out who's on the cover.
Yes,
that.
You have to guess at least, I would say, three of the things
okay.
on the cover.
Okay. Miley Cyrus?
No.
No? Okay.
I wouldn't say Miley Cyrus was top 10.
Well, but in terms of press coverage.
Okay.
So top 10 in the various media. Jennifer Lawrence?
No.
Let's see. It's very hard.
You can ask me questions. You don't have to just guess.
Okay, well, is one of the people in the movies?
Yes.
Is it a man?
There is a man in a movie and a woman in a movie.
In a movie. Okay. Is the man over 40?
Yeah. I'm going to say yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to just give up?
No. Is the man... I mean, it's going to take me 2 minutes just to get the man. Clooney?
No.
Hanks?
No.
Okay.
You're way off base.
I'm just randomly guessing.
I'm thinking of best movies of the year.
Best movies of the year.
What's getting Oscar buzz?
Man, I'm just blanking here.
Yeah, you only got 5 seconds.
Okay, well, I have no clue.
Can you think of a TV show that got lots of buzz this year?
Not Modern Family. I don't know.
Okay, you're done. 12 Years a Slave. Gravity. Breaking Bad, you should have gotten those three. I'm sorry.
Well, I've been going for people.
I know, but, you know, if you would have gotten Gravity, you could have said Sandra Bullock. I'm sorry, I'm not going to yell at you anymore.
Well, I guess Clooney, so.
Yeah, but you didn't say for Gravity. He was in, like, a lot of stuff. All right, so I'm going to let it go now, and I'm not going to yell at you. It was a hard one.
Those list ones are always hard.
Yes, even when I give you clues. So I'm just going to stop now.
Okay. I want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com to yell at Mark about the cover of Entertainment Weekly. You can like us at facebook.com/sfppn to post your pictures of the cover of Entertainment Weekly. You can follow us on Twitter.
But she's not going to mention it again.
SFPPN. Where I will tweet about Mark's failure to identify anyone on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. Or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFPE.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.